War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, live from Capitol Hill on a dreary and rainy Friday, the 3rd of January, year of our Lord, 2020. It's episode 97. Raheem Kassam is with us, our wingman from UKIP and Brexit fame. Jason Miller is on assignment. Did the John Cardillo show yesterday down in South Florida on Newsmax TV. Remember, we're live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, nationwide on the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, also on AmericasVoice.news, a streaming platform both here in the United States, throughout the world. And of course, Newsmax TV, now in 70 million homes under the leadership of its founder and CEO, Chris Ruddy. Honored to be joined today by Tom Fitton, one of the, you've seen him on Fox, you've seen him all over the place, Fox Business on Lou Dobbs, one of the great, has built one of the great institutions in the conservative movement, Judicial Watch. And I have to say, and a very discerning guy is my 98-year-old father, who can smell a phony from a mile away. He's the biggest Fitton fan in the world. He got up early this morning. He's watching this live.
Oh, wonderful.
Anytime Fitton's on, every time I walk in, he reads me your newsletter.
That's great.
No.
It's a great newsletter.
And you know why? Because he said, this guy Fitton, he started giving you, I don't know, $10, which is a big deal for him, you know, years ago, and you've always come through for him. So now he's a bigger donor. He just says, hey, that Fitton guy, that Tom Fitton, he does what he says he's going to do, and I think that's very important. We're going to get into all that today, whether it's Benghazi, whether it's happening in Baghdad. You've been all over this now for 10 years and beyond. I want to go to the breaking news, though. Raheem, tell us, set the stage for where we are. Remember, this show is going to be live every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal slash exoneration of President Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States. 1 hour a day, we're here. 1 hour a day, we're here. We're going to talk about the exoneration versus the acquittal. We haven't. But we had a new. Did we have a wag the dog moment last night, or is this strategic? What happened overnight? Where do we stand this morning?
So overnight, you'll remember that on New Year's Eve, there was a storming of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad and a pretty quick reaction from the United States to repel that. Overnight, last night, we learned about the killing, assassination, effectively, of Qasem Soleimani, who was an Iranian major general in the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, called the commander of their best force. They would say the Quds Force, and really the guy who has been for over a decade now coordinating strategy for Iran in the Middle East, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Iraq, and has been responsible, according to the Pentagon and according to many foreign policy experts, most, if not all, responsible for the killing and targeting of U.S. interests and U.S. personnel, U.S. contractors in the region. That hasn't slowed down. If anything, it has sped up the targeting of U.S. interests over the last year. And Soleimani, alongside others, including one of the deputy leaders of one of the Hezbollah groups as well under him, one of his wingmen, his PR wingmen,
his communication strategist.
Well, effectively his PR guy. And another who was traveling guy. With him were killed last night in leaving Baghdad airport in a convoy. Now, this is
by U.S. targeted by U.S. drone.
By a U.S. Reaper drone. Now, this is pretty massive. It's a pretty massive deal. It's far bigger than Baghdadi, for instance,
who's pretty big,
which was a pretty big get. This is taking out one of the top military leaders of one of the top adversaries you have in the world.
He's the top. The arc to the sea through Baghdad, Damascus, Beirut is because the Quds Force with Hezbollah is its expeditionary force. This is the special forces that unites it and does the political warfare, the information warfare, and does the wet work. This guy's the major player, right?
Yeah, now, he himself only has risen to the fore in the last couple of years in a public sense.
Right.
He's been working behind the scenes for a while. They call him the shadow commander
right.
because of how just behind the scenes means he is on all sorts of things. He served in the 80 to 88 Iran war against Iraq in the Revolutionary Guards, was appointed the Quds Force commander in 97, and reported directly to the Supreme Leader.
We're going
to
get in the moment, but I also think he oversaw the Shiite militias that were our allies in taking down ISIS. He's meant the leader taking down ISIS, so it gets very murky here. Yes. So it's obviously a bad guy. I want to go to Fenton for a second. President Trump signaled something the other day. We're not going to have any more Benghazis. You're the Benghazi guy. It was Judicial Watch really brought the investigation of Benghazi into the national forefront, and eventually led to the investigation and had Hillary Clinton for 9 hours or 12 hours on national TV. When President Trump says that no more Benghazis, what did that mean to you?
Well, it meant that we weren't going to abandon people in the field, that we were going to defend our interests, and that we weren't, hopefully, in the long run, going to lie about what happened here. And with Benghazi, we had documents. I mean, the more everyone understands the Benghazi scandal generally, that there was this an attack, they lied about it, said it was a video as opposed to terrorists. They were trying to protect president's re-election.
But no more of this when they start storming embassies and they start. Okay. He's not going to have an Iranian hostage crisis. He's not going to have a Benghazi with a bunch of guys on top of a wall. He's going to introduce combat troops. He's going to introduce whatever he's got to introduce to protect that.
Let me give you two examples of what we found in Benghazi. They didn't even have enough planes to take our dead out of Benghazi after the attack. That's how slow our reaction was. On top of that, they were offered, the Obama administration by the Defense Department, almost immediately forces to fly in. And if they had been allowed to leave at the time, they could have gotten there in time to save those killed in the second part of the attack at the CIA annex. Obviously, that did not happen here.
Right. Is that, Raheem, to Tom's point, as soon as the guy gets off the plane at Baghdad airport, he's coming back into Baghdad in a very tenuous situation. We did have a stand down of the initial guys that overtook the embassy. But do you think that's what triggers his going to his just reward, is that they said, hey, we're not going to have a situation. This guy is going to come in and target more Americans, going to target American interests.
One of the things I should have mentioned in the opening was that Qasem Soleimani was very, very heavily involved, if not orchestrated, the original Benghazi attack. Very much behind the organization of forces there, very much behind pushing into the embassy and exploiting what was deemed to be an easy target. And he saw this as an easy target. A target that wouldn't be defended on the front end and wouldn't be defended on the back end. Under the Obama administration, they saw that as quite clear. There has been a lot of consternation about where President Trump stands on Iran and on taking the fight to Iran if the fight needs to be taken to Iran. So this last attack on December the 31st was Soleimani's attempt at showing, okay, maybe we can make an Obama out of this guy. Maybe we can attack that embassy and there will be no ramifications. We've got to push. He's under attack domestically. He's under fire there. He wants out of the region.
You think they're watching the impeachment hearings?
I think they are. I think they absolutely are. And here's the thing. He pushed too far. He didn't quite realize what he had gotten into. He didn't quite realize how much President Trump would bolster that compound, the embassy. He didn't quite realize that Trump would get the Iraqis to help stand down those militia forces faster than anything Obama had ever done on the international stage. And he went in there. It was half a victory lap to say, see, we can still get at you. But it was half a, oh my goodness, this didn't quite work.
People should understand this terrorist who, in addition to killing hundreds of Americans in Iraq,
thousands,
and injuring countless, he tried to organize a terrorist attack here in Washington, D.C. by using the Mexican drug cartels to take out an opponent.
He tried to blow up, was it Cafe Milano? He tried to blow up. It says a Georgetown restaurant. It's Cafe Milano, the party of Davos. He tried to blow it up, right?
And he was. They didn't go. Bush didn't go after him. Obama didn't go after him. So he was protected for political purposes.
What do you mean, political purposes?
Well, they didn't want to make more of an issue with Iran by going after the man responsible for blowing up American soldiers.
They were afraid of kicking over the hornet's nest.
That's right. And instead, he was able to play the U.S. He forced the removal of most of our forces out of Iraq. He helped create the circumstances. He thinks he's the great manipulator. These guys are gangsters. And gangsters don't generally know what they're doing in the long run. So all the strife you see in the Middle East can be assigned to this guy in many respects. Soleimani was protected by the establishment here in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And Trump comes in. I guarantee you, he was told, oh, don't do this. You can't do this. Mm-hmm. Even though he planned this attack on our embassy, and even though he's flying into Baghdad to plan further attacks.
Like the commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
Flying right in.
And here he has it. This is, and of course, the left is controlled. The organized left is controlled by advocates for terrorists. And they're outraged. And on top of that, you have the Obama gang who collaborated with the Iranians and have an interest in protecting their government operators like Soleimani.
Okay,
there was a lot of crying on Twitter last night from Ben Rhodes and the others.
Okay, I want to get back to, we're going to come back to all this because this deals right with what we're talking about. Okay, and I want to talk about, where are we winning? Beirut, Baghdad, Tehran, the streets on fire with millennials is saying we're not going to have it anymore. That's why he's flying around. Is that the way to go? Short commercial break. War Room Impeachment with Tom Fitton, Raheem Kassam, Steve Bannon. We'll return in just a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back live on Capitol Hill, Friday, 3 January, the year of our Lord, 2020, episode 97. Raheem, walk us through, because we're going to talk about Twitter and how the left and the right are playing this morning, the America First crowd versus the neoliberal neocons. Why this guy, why now, and why in this place?
Look, Soleimani was the head of the snake as far as Iran's influence in the region, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, was concerned. In Afghanistan, was the key to a lot of the planning around Benghazi, as Tom mentioned in the last segment as well, had actually tried to plan assassinations in Washington, D.C. also. This was somebody who was... bugbear is a light way of putting it, but somebody who was really under the nails of the United States and strategy in the region and indeed domestic strategy for a very long time. This is a very, very big escalation. Let's be very clear about that. It is ratcheting up what's happening between the United States and Iran, but it's also a very clear sign that, hey, on December the 31st, you guys arranged and Soleimani arranged for thousands of militia members dressed up as protesters and called protesters by the Washington Post and others.
Mourners
and protesters in the headlines.
And the headlines, on the newspapers, on the hard copies. And it soon became clear, again, like Benghazi became clear, that it wasn't just ordinary people who were protesting. These were militia members under Soleimani's direction who wanted to do another Benghazi, at this time in the Baghdad embassy of the United States. This is somebody who has presided over hundreds of deaths of U.S. servicemen and women in the region. This is somebody who has attacked U.S. interests, this is somebody who has attacked U.S. defense contractors in the region as well, and who has, as Tom also mentioned, looked at utilizing groups out of Latin America to attack the United States too. This cuts the head off the snake, but what this also does, and there's a lot of voices out there on this at the moment, of course a lot of Iran experts out there at the moment, saying, look, this endangers America more, this draws us into war. This endangers American lives abroad. And of course, there is now advice from the State Department for Americans, leave Iraq immediately.
You said, I want to go back to this, because you've spent years looking at Benghazi. You made it a national issue. I think it had a big impact on the 2016 campaign because of Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, her performance in that. You said that you see guys on the left actually, you think, rooting for a big hit back on by the terrorists. You also said beforehand there's a lot of guys in the Obama administration, et cetera, that are exposed on this, right, for what they did during the Obama administration. Explain that.
Well, you have
complicit, I guess, is the way you implied it.
Well, first of all, you have leftists almost salivating. Read Twitter, look at the news coverage, salivating in a heated way for retaliation by the Iranians. It's incredible.
I mean, they're looking for an escalation.
Yeah, they're looking for it. They're hoping not, they obviously personally don't want to see people die, but they want to be vindicated in their anti-Trump derangement. Look, President Trump caused this. And then you have the Obama gang, as I call them, who work with people like Soleimani in the Iran deal. They've been desperately...
What do you mean, work with people like Soleimani on the Iran deal? That's a pretty harsh...
Oh, well, you send $1 billion in cash. Do you think it doesn't end up with...
You think Soleimani? You think Soleimani's got that? He's also the paymaster, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. These were their
oligarchy.
These were their negotiating partners. And they all knew he was involved in killing dozens, hundreds of Americans. The terrorism is well... Look, he's a designated terrorist by the United States, and it should be kind of a non-event in terms of controversy that he would be killed, especially given the circumstances in Iraq. But the left is, again, controlled by advocates for terrorists. They don't like America defending itself, even if it is in a calculated way. This does not mean a war with Iran. That's silly.
You don't believe this is escalation that leads to that?
Look, I think it
you
will...
You just assassinated the top guy.
It's going to increase our security issues with respect to Iran, but they're going to look twice at taking on America.
You're saying they're already at war anyway. They're trying to take over there. This thing is like China. It's like China. You can't say, oh, you're trying to get a war, trade war with China. They've been at war with you for...
What's going to happen? Years. They're going to attack our embassy. They already have. They've killed hundreds of American troops. They already have. They were in the midst of planning further attacks on American interests.
Is there a pattern of evidence in Twitter or overnight on the commentators and the papers to what Tom Fitton's saying?
Oh, overnight. I mean, it was instantaneous. There was some chatter coming out before this happened of the let's say the policy community, as they call themselves, the foreign policy community in Washington, D.C.
The interagency consensus.
There were tweets already. I mean, isn't
what this is impeachment's all about. By the way, this is why this plays right into it, right?
Yeah, I had the luck of being with two reporters last night who do Iran and have done Iran for 10 years, and we're getting a lot of information live, and we were looking through a lot of the reaction from people. I mean, Brian Klass at the University College London, Washington Post, columnist saying the Trump and his sycophants can't manage the imminent crisis. Samantha Power saying a flag is not a strategy. That's in reference to the President Trump's tweet immediately after last night.
In.
You have Ezra Klein. You have Chris Murphy. All of them. Tom?
Well, the president just tweeted out a half hour ago. He basically highlighted the fact that this guy's killed or wounded hundreds and thousands of Americans, and this is the other point that the dishonest left doesn't want to highlight. He was a murderer of Iranians, and he said that the president said he's responsible for the deaths of millions of people, including the most recent large number of protesters killed in Iran itself. While Iran will never be able to properly admit it, Soleimani was both hated and feared within the country. They are not nearly as saddened as the leaders will let the outside world believe. He should have been taken out many years ago.
Okay, but this goes to the point. Why is he deployed right now? He's deployed right now because Beirut, and we had the young woman from the protesters on the show a couple weeks ago, in studio, sitting right there. We have Beirut on fire. We have Baghdad in the streets on fire. We have Tehran on fire. That's why he's suppressing. We've got the whole region now, and that's because of American economic warfare, American sanctions. You're choking down the mullahs. You're choking them down, and you're not even. We haven't even started to choke down with China, who's their essential sponsor. That's working. Why then do you go and you forced him out there to try to tamp this down? Why do you then go? And obviously, it is an escalation, at least the way the region thinks about it. When you take out a guy like this, because they believe in the great man theory, also. Why do you take him out when it's working in the streets? You first and then Tom.
You know, interesting, there's been a lot of talk recently about Soleimani being promoted from within, being promoted politically, maybe being the next president.
Had a picture of Khamenei. The Guardian's got a big picture of Khamenei from September. Khamenei and Sadr from Iraq and him all sitting together on some sort of stage, like to the three leaders.
And I believe also the Financial Times had him as one of the key figures of this year.
Yes.
I think day before yesterday edition.
Yes.
Look.
He's a player.
Why now? He had shown that he was about to get ready to launch a new wave of attacks against U.S. interests in the region. This is a preventative measure. It's a firm one, but it's going to work.
Is the economic war that we're running against these guys good enough? Should it be more? Should it be less? You tell me. What's your assessment of how we're doing on the sanctions?
Well, obviously, they're working because that's why our embassy was attacked. They've been trying to provoke America to give a big response that inflames the situation further or gets them out from under the sanctions.
Okay, how do you get to the War Room 24/7?
Warroom.org is the URL. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter, the podcast. It's all free and updated 24/7, so whenever there's breaking news, you get it right to your inbox.
The Site's on Fire, episode 97. Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch, Raheem Ghassam, Steve Bannon. We'll be back about the campaign in just a second.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back. Episode 97, live from Capitol Hill. War Room Impeachment. Miller, Kassam, Bannon, now joined by Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. Okay, let's go to Bernie Sanders. Finally, I think Bernie Sanders guys are listening to the show. Bernie Sanders comes out last night. What does he say, Raheem? He's now not just raising a ton of money. He is trying to take the fight, unsheathing the pillow, right? He's trying to take the fight to Joe Biden.
Yeah, he's saying a lot of things about Joe Biden. The gloves are definitely coming off in Iowa. Bernie Sanders saying Joe Biden has a weak record. He says it's a lot of baggage that Joe takes into a campaign, which isn't going to create energy and excitement. He brings into this campaign a record which is so weak that it just cannot create the kind of excitement and energy that is going to be needed to defeat Donald Trump.
I mean, we're going to put our harangue up over the last couple of days. I want to go to Fitton. This is what you've been fighting for 10 years, 15 years at Judicial Watch. The reason one of the most important institutions on the right is the crony capitalism in Washington, D.C. Why is it taking Bernie? Why is Bernie Sanders in the progressive left so late to the party of attacking? You know, this is why he wasn't the nominee in 16. He didn't go after Hillary Clinton. Tom Fitton's going after Hillary Clinton. Steve Bannon's going after Hillary Clinton. Guys on the right are going after her on her corruption and incompetence. Why does he now? And do you think Biden's a better target than even Clinton?
Well, he certainly has significant corruption issues that I would think that honest Democrats would be concerned about. And we're nonpartisan, and I've always been struck by the failure of politicians in both political parties to not take advantage of the anti-corruption sentiment on both the left and the right. There are many people who support the Democrats who hate corruption in Washington, D.C. It's one of these 80-20 polling issues. And I always thought that Trump was always going to be a successful politician. I didn't know if he was going to win or anything like that, because it's like, well, I know Judicial Watch was doing this anti-corruption work, and we were very successful. Sure enough, you had an anti-corruption politician who ran on that issue, who also was very successful. And that can work on both the Democrat and Republican side. So to me, it's always an opportunity for politicians to take on corruption, and no one's done it yet in the Democratic side.
Do you think this sticks?
The fight?
Well, do you think that this is the line of attack that he goes down, which we've been advocating to those guys? You got to take about the NAFTA. You got to take about he's the senator from Wilmington, Delaware, which is the corporate capital of America.
Yeah, and I think this is just kind of an opening on it. This is to see where he's weak. They'll poll test this. They'll figure out what the reaction is to this.
It was still pretty weak, too. I mean, Bernie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the easy stuff, right? Wait until Sanders realizes this actually does work and will work for him. Then he starts going after China. Hey, maybe we might even get a mention of Burisma in Ukraine. Who knows?
The reason we want to have you on here, the president the other day, we've been saying it's the trial of the century. It's the trial of the century. We're going to get to the trial in a minute. President changes as he always, because he's a master in mass communication. He says, no. It's the crime of the century. What's the crime here? What's the crime? Donald Trump's saying the crime of the century is against him. What is it?
Well, there's been a series of crimes that began during the campaign with the...
These are crimes now.
Illegal spying on the candidate. It continued as he was president, a conspiracy in violation of the law, I believe, misuse of office for political purposes, another violation of the law, lying to the courts, more violations of the law, lying about it under oath, additional violations of the law. And the question is, are there going to be...
Was McCabe yesterday admitting that he lied? Is this the first tell officially that the facade is starting to crack?
You know what, Steve? He was referred for prosecution based on that material in April of 2018. The Justice Department still hasn't figured out whether they want to prosecute him or not. It is extraordinarily frustrating to see a deputy FBI director, acting FBI director for a time, referred for prosecution. Remember, Comey was referred to for prosecution to the Justice Department for lying about illegally leaking the president's FBI files. No prosecution. Now we're all waiting for Mr. Durham to act. I'm hopeful he does something. I'm not expecting he will.
Well, we got about a minute here. The IG report, did that play? Because we've heard the Tom Fittons. I'm going to come back after the break about the crime of the century and back it up. Is that you're not wearing a tinfoil hat? Did the IG report back up what you're saying, or was it a letdown for you?
It reconfirmed what we're saying, but you'll notice there weren't too many referrals for criminal prosecution.
Why was that?
because it's the IG who is appointed by Barack Obama, a creature of the institution of the Justice Department. The IG is not going to come in and say everyone who ran the Justice Department and the FBI for the last 5-6 years needs to be prosecuted.
If it's okay, we're going to take a break here.
Even though the facts demand it.
We're going to get to all that when we come back from the break. Raheem, tell people how they get to the podcast.
If you go to warroom.org/podcast, you have all of the options there, whether you're on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify. If you search it in your podcast app, War Room Impeachment, you'll be able to get up-to-date day-to-day episodes of everything that comes out of here.
Okay, we're on the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Nationwide, America's voice throughout the world on a streaming platform, of course, Newsmax TV. We'll return in a second. Talk to Tom Fitton. If it's the crime of the century, why don't we have a trial that turns the guns on them? In a moment.
War Room Impeachment on the John Frederick's Radio Network.
Welcome back live on Capitol Hill, episode 97. Raheem Kassam, Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch, Steve Bannon of War Room Impeachment. We're here every day until the day after President Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States, is either acquitted or exonerated. That's what we're talking about. Tom Fitton, President Trump makes the case it's the crime of the century. We've made the case it's the trial of the century. If it's the crime of the century and the trial of the century, why don't we bring it? That means witnesses. That means evidence. That means you finally get, you know, you're whining. You and Hannity every day are whining about the whistleblower and the whistleblower this and Clapper that and Brennan that. We got a chance. Bring it all up. Take as long as we got to take. Right? And, of course, they're going to get Mulvaney. They're going to get Bolton. But, hey, I've seen Maggie Haberman's big expose, Raheem. I saw the emails yesterday, you know, in their meltdown on MSNBC. Mm-hmm. They're a meltdown on, you know, Aaron Burnett. They're all on meltdown. They're waving the things around. There's nothing, it seems to me, that I've seen that comes up that even comes close to the crime of the century, right? So, Fitton, what are we doing here?
Well, this is a coup. And
Hold it. So you're a guy agrees with you as anonymous. Anonymous says it's the steady state coup, right? But that and Trump and his generals who read Bergen's book, same thing. Do you believe it's a coup? That's a pretty harsh term.
It is a coup in the sense that there is no good faith basis to try to remove the president. When you don't have a good faith basis to remove a president, you proceed to remove him. You're obviating the Constitution. You're overthrowing the Constitution. So Pelosi is expanding the coup to try to overthrow the Senate by withholding impeachment articles to get a show trial of the president. I don't think the coup plotters should get the benefit of their corruption with a Senate trial that will be nothing but abusive of the president.
What do you mean abusive?
Because any Senate trial is going to have anti-Trump witnesses. There's no majority in the Senate, and there's no leadership in the Senate for witnesses that would advocate for the president. And to the degree,
you're telling me Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and these guys, the president's buddies, are not advocating and can't crack the whip to get 51 votes to get his witnesses up?
And I think they've made the tactical decision, and I think it's one in good faith that they don't have the numbers to do this, and the Senate isn't going to allow it to happen. I think an intermediate solution, a compromise, would be to have a preliminary hearing to put Schiff and his prosecutorial misconduct on trial. And so that's the basis to reject by the full Senate.
Walk us through the mechanics of how this would work.
You have the Senate set up a trial. And as part of the trial system, like we have in the regular courts, you have preliminary hearings, evidentiary hearings, hearings related to prosecutorial misconduct as an introductory matter. And that's when you talk about what Schiff did. It's what you talk about, the abuse of Schiff. You talk about the whistleblower. You get witnesses in related to that. And that is reported to the full Senate, and that's the basis to reject an abusive trial of the president.
The underlying point you're saying—
You get your witnesses without the abusive trial.
The underlying point you're making is that there is no crime here in what the president did, but there is the crime of the century is the coup against the nullification project actually in its execution was not just the mainstream media, but it was actually a crime against a sitting president. That's what you want to expose.
You have Ukraine was the fulcrum for the Russiagate smear on Trump. They tried to leverage Ukrainian information to destroy Trump with the Russiagate lies. You can bring that up in the preliminary investigation, and that this is a follow-on the previous criminal activity as highlighted by the IG. Schiff had the improper contacts with the leaker. He improperly took the phone records of the president's lawyers and published them and other innocent Americans.
Does Crossfire Hurricane comes up in this?
I think that's the president should be able to say he had a good faith basis for doing this. And one of the reasons he's being prosecuted is that you have massive obstruction of justice by the House to protect Biden and the others from a criminal investigation.
You've gone through 7,000 pages of testimony. You're in your team, Raheem. How does this play to you?
Look, the way I look at it is the president should look at a trial and look at this whole process like he looked at the attack on the Baghdad embassy, right? If you don't respond in kind and you don't escalate back in return, you're only going to attract more attacks on you. That's what this whole thing is about. The Republicans, I understand, they don't have an appetite. They don't have an appetite to be strong on this. But he's never listened to the Republican status quo.
That's why he's president.
Tom, there's too many reports. There's too many never-Trumpers still in the administration. There's too many people, swamp monsters in Washington, D.C., getting away with it. McCabe going up there and saying, I lied. What are you going to do about it?
You know what's going to happen is there's going to be a trial. And it's going to be anti-Trump witnesses, and it's going to be the Kavanaugh hearings times.
This is the point I want to get to.
The 12th, okay, if you to go, the 12th power.
We've gone through all 7,000 pages. If you have Adam, the way the trial's set up now, if you have Adam Schiff doing a curated version for 4 days of that, how's that going to sit with the President of the United States?
Oh, he'll go ballistic. But then he'll be told, someone will be pissing on his leg and telling him it's raining and there's nothing he can do about it. Mm-hmm. Look, the same crowd that got him impeached is going to be telling him he can't do anything to protect himself from a Senate further abuse by the Senate.
Okay, I want to go to your on this preliminary hearing. Tell me who your witness, who's the witness. Give me your top two or three witnesses that show up in front of the nation.
Schiff is top staff. The Vindman, the whistleblower, in terms of investigating their communications about the potential mishandling classified information that
you say, and you're saying when they turn over their electronic devices, their text messages, their emails, their meetings, all that, you see, then that's when you start to bring up the coup, and that's the crime of the century.
Yeah. You focus on that.
How deep do you think, Tom Fitton? You've looked at this a long time. How deep do you think this crime goes, and to what level?
Well, Schiff is a tool of the DNC and the Fusion GPS Hillary Clinton gang. I mean, he was working hand in glove over the years in terms of pushing out this knowing falsehood against the President of the United States. And he sees his allies being subject to potential criminal prosecution, however unlikely I think that is. They're nervous about it. So what do? You try to freeze the administration from doing anything about it through these coup activities. Yeah. And, you know, we're assuming there's going to be a trial shortly. You know, as far as the Democrats in the House concerned, they want perpetual impeachment of the president. They may just continue this process through the 9 months.
What do you think about what Fitton's laying out?
I think he's absolutely right. And I think
you believe the preliminary thing, you get the witnesses up there, you start, if it's the crime of the century, treat it like the crime of the century.
I think so. And
well, prosecutorial misconduct needs to be on trial in the Senate. Schiff needs to be on trial, not the president.
Tom, just do you believe there is any path to make that happen?
Well, without leadership, there isn't, and that's why we're providing it here.
You think, but you're absolutely. Is there anything that happens on the witnesses? You saw the emails yesterday. We only got 30 seconds here. Anything that you've seen that scares you that could come up from Bolton or from Mulvaney or any of the redacted emails?
No, the evidence, the unredacted emails or the emails show that there were people nervous about holding the money too long because they might have to reappropriate it. There was nothing illegal that went on.
It's a typical to and fro you see in Washington.
It confirms the president didn't want to spend money on a corrupt country. How many times do we have to have that reconfirmed?
Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to come back. Make sure you go. We got this, the number one or the on fire podcast on impeachment. Here's why. Because if you want to find out what's going on the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, it's War Room Impeachment. You come to, we have people like Tom Fitton. We bring every day the wisdom, the knowledge, and the ability to execute as guys like Fitton can. WarRoom.org, Raheem and his team are on fire, keeping it updated 24/7. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we're going to get some concluding thoughts of Tom Fitton and Raheem Kassam on the crime of the century.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Episode 97, War Room Impeachment Live. Tom Fitton, Raheem Kassam. Only a couple of minutes left. So the president need to do, he just did a drone strike in Baghdad. does he need to do a drone strike here for the? And the point is to unlock all the information that is out there that would actually show the background to the crime of the century. Specifically, the 40 subpoenas that Nunez in the House Intelligence Committee. We still don't have any of that. Why is all this information fitting? You fight this every day. Why is the Trump administration's DOJ holding back, and his State Department, Intelligence Services, Defense Department, holding back all this information that is exculpatory to him?
Isn't it amazing how FOIA works for the left? They get all this information on the
right away.
The Ukrainian
decision. Happens immediately.
And we're asking for the information about the firing of the prosecutor by Biden through the withholding.
But
of
tell
the aid.
Audience how that does work. How did they drop these FOIA requests, and they've got stuff in the middle of the trial that's coming out, and you've been working for years. Is your FOIA request not specific enough?
Well, we asked about the Biden corruption. They said, well, we can't even complete the search for the records until the end of January. 2 weeks ago, we had 6 lawyers from the government, from the Justice Department and the State Department, come into federal court and try to shut down our case on Clinton emails and Benghazi. The president has been undermined by the deep state and an unimaginative crop of appointees who just refuse to who just don't care about transparency. Ukraine, the deep state conspiracy against him, Spygate, all of this is being withheld. You had Strzok complaining about the FBI screwing around with him the other day. The FBI is still protecting Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and James Comey and Andrew McCabe.
Does he need to go on offense?
Oh, I think deploy the same strategy that you just deployed in Iraq. Deploy it right here in Washington, D.C. You know, they're not just one snake here, like you have the snake of Iran in the Middle East. There are many snakes, and they all need their heads cut off them. And the president needs to adopt the same strategy. If you keep allowing yourself to be attacked, they will keep attacking
because you. Because if you just get acquitted, what they're going to say is that, oh, it was rigged, the system was rigged because you had the votes, and the impeachment process still continues on.
You can have it. The president should go on a transparency tear. Release everything on Ukraine. You had all this outrageous activity out of the Ukrainian embassy, the Biden angle. You had the state. We had confirmation during the coup plot in the House that the only information that the State Department and the White House under Obama was concerned about Biden's corruption.
If you were this is perfect. It's 2020 transparency. 2020 crystal vision. This is what he should be doing right now.
Exactly. Okay. If you were asked, we got 30 seconds. If you were asked, would you step aside and take a leave of absence from Judicial Watch to go in the White House and help the president?
No.
Why?
Because I think Judicial Watch needs to be out there fighting independently.
You're helping on better
on
the outside.
Rule of law. Now, we're advocating for the rule. This is not about President Trump's policies. This is about whether or not our constitutional republic's being undermined. The president is not going to be in office forever. And we've got to protect our constitution. And the president's a crime victim. And we need voices on the outside protecting the rule of law.
Tom Fitton, Judicial Watch. How do you get to Judicial Watch? Give us your Twitter feed so people, what's your handle?
It's at Judicial Watch, at Tom Fitton. We're all over the internet.
Okay, episode 97, Tom Fitton, Raheem Kassam. Go to warroom.org. Back tomorrow morning. Bill Gertz, live, 9 a.m., talking about everything geopolitically.